Hi all, Lily here. We've talked about how much we love Needed, but one product I really leaned on, especially through my VBAC pregnancy, was their prenatal collagen. I love how simple and clean it is. It's pure hydrolyzed bovine collagen, nothing extra, with a totally neutral flavor that mixes seamlessly into drinks or food. Collagen is especially important because our natural production starts slowing in our early 20s, and pregnancy, stress, and postpartum recovery only increase those needs. It's rich in amino acids like glycine and proline, which are key building blocks for collagen production in the body. It was such an easy, supportive addition for me during my pregnancy and recovery, and it's another reason why we trust Needed so much. You can get 20% off with code TVL at checkout. Head to thisisneeded.com today, and you can even stack it on top of their new subscription discount as well. So that's thisisneeded.com with code TVL for 20% off. Hello, women of strength. Welcome back to the VBAC Link. My name is Lily. I'm your host, and I am not joined today by Paige. She is doulaing her life away at a birth currently, and I'm just sending her all my love. I know she misses you all. And yeah, today we have Willa on the podcast. She is so, so lovely, and the way that she tells her birth stories and the way that she processed and I don't know. I just feel like our conversation today was really, really fantastic, and I know you're going to love it. I'm particularly excited for you to hear about this VBAC story. She VBAC'd a 10-pound baby, and she also was induced with something that is a more rare form of induction here in the U.S. It's dilapan rods, which are small rods that are inserted into the cervix, and they can be inserted when you are not like heavily dilated. So an option for those who are not dilated enough for a Foley or a Cook's catheter. And they essentially are kind of like little sponges that absorb cervical fluid and then mechanically dilate the cervix. So they're a really cool option. They're not widely available in the U.S., unfortunately, but I'm really excited to see them coming online here in the U.S. and can't wait for you to hear about her story. She is truly, truly fantastic. All right, my friends. Well, I am going to read just a small comment from episode 447 on Spotify. This was with Angela Doss, who is my lovely IBCLC. And someone commented and said, "Oh, wow, I love this episode. I was literally talking to my lactation consultant yesterday about how to become one." So if you are curious about IBCLC things, International Board Certified Lactation Consultant, go check out episode 447 with Angela and her VBAC stories and also her lovely breastfeeding advice. And if you have not yet already, leave us a review or leave us a comment. If you're listening on Spotify, you can leave us a comment. If you're listening to us on Apple or Spotify, you can leave us a review. If you're listening on YouTube, you can comment on episodes. We love to hear from you, and we read a review every single week. So if you want to have a little shout out on the podcast, this review today was from Bethany. We would love to hear from you. It helps people find our podcast the more that you send us your love in the form of reviews and comments. So thank you to all of those who have done that. And we're going to dive in. I don't have Paige to chit chat with, so let's get going. Without further ado, here's our intro, and we'll be back with Willa. Hi, I'm Lily.
And I'm Paige. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast.
We're moms and doulas who know firsthand that birth after cesarean isn't always straightforward. I'm a miscarriage and ectopic mom who went on to have a hospital water birth VBAC.
And I've had two CBACs and a planned maternal assisted cesarean.
Our experiences may be different, but our mission is the same: to make birth after cesarean better.
On this podcast, you'll hear powerful stories of VBACs, repeat cesareans, and CBACs from women around the world.
We'll also bring in expert insight, practical tools, and encouragement to help you feel informed and supported as you plan your next birth.
Whether you're preparing for a VBAC, choosing a repeat cesarean, or simply exploring your options, this space is for you.
Because every story matters, and we're here to remind you that you've got options, you've got support, and you're never alone.
The VBAC Link is storytelling by nature. The stories on this podcast do not represent a universally best or safest option for everyone.
This podcast is intended to encourage and inform. It does not replace individualized advice from a qualified medical provider. Women of Strength, welcome back to the VBAC Link. I am here with sweet Willa. She is amazing and incredible. I love her already, and I know you're going to love her too. I'm going to read a little bit about her, and then Willa will hand the time over to you. We're so excited to hear your stories. Willa lives in San Francisco with her husband, her three-year-old daughter, and her six-month-old baby. Oh my gosh. And their loyal pup, Renzo. She works at a historic house and garden where you can find her nerding out about California history, leading hikes along a creek in the Redwoods, and recording the perfect gravel footsteps crunch for her garden podcast. Oh my God. In her free time, she loves taking the kids to the beach and reading mystery novels. Amazing. Well, you'll have to tell us where to find you podcast-wise, Willa, but I'm going to hand the floor over to you. Tell us all about these babies and how they made it into the world.
Sure. And just first of all, like, thank you so much for creating this space for people. It was really important for me. I'll get into it kind of later in my story, but you know, just the space for people to talk about this is so important. So I am like a little nervous, to be honest, to come on and tell my story. But I benefited so much. I listened to so many birth stories and it was so helpful for me that I feel like this is one way to give back. So here we go. So my husband and I got pregnant at the end of 2022. It took a little bit longer to conceive than expected, which I know is a lot of people's story. I definitely went down like the whole rabbit hole, ovulation tracking, like so anxious and intense about it. And then, you know, she came when she came, which is perfect. And she's great. I only listened to birth stories during this pregnancy that were like super, like how I envisioned mine to go. So I only listened to like empowering, like hospital, epidural, like vaginal stories that were just like everything that I was dreaming of. That's all. I like, if it had the word positive in it, I was listening to it and nothing else. So I really wasn't prepared at all when my birth wasn't exactly like how I was like envisioning it in fantasy land. And I did no research about C-sections really at all. So I was going in blind on that as well. It was a pretty uncomplicated pregnancy. I was with a midwives group at UCSF here in San Francisco. And I went past my due date. So I wasn't like worried about it. I don't know, but I wasn't dilated at all. They did, you know, a check. They couldn't get in there to do a membrane sweep and was going to like non-stress tests. And it was at the second one that I feel like was kind of the first moment where I was like, oh, maybe like something isn't going to go exactly as I had perfectly planned in my head. And it was that the nurse mentioned just like, hey, like, has anyone told you that your baby's like sunny side up? And I was like, oh, no one had mentioned it. And I had heard of back labor. So I immediately started panicking because I was like, is that going to happen to me? And then I went past 41 weeks and started kind of like emotionally spiraling. I know anyone who's gone past the due date probably like knows that feeling of like what's happening? I'm doing all the things. I'm drinking the tea. I'm doing the curb walking and like nothing's happening. And I'm just getting like crankier and bigger and sweatier. It was summer. I remember I went to Dolores Park the day before I went into labor, which is in San Francisco. It's like this big park where there's so many like young people just being cool and hanging out. And I was there like, oh, So it was Mother's Day. So it was the night before Mother's Day. And I was just like, so done. I was 41 and 4 days or something. And my husband gave me as a gift, because, you know, it's almost a mother. He gave me a beautiful floral print by one of my favorite artists, and he had it inscribed with our daughter's name. And so I feel like that was kind of the moment where I like surrendered a little bit and was like, okay, like I let that oxytocin come in and I talked to my belly for the first time. Like I'm not necessarily, I didn't think of myself as that kind of person, but I was finally like, I think I need to like talk to her and tell her that like, we want to meet her, we're ready. And I went into labor that night at midnight, which is cool. I was like, okay, like this is going to be a Mother's Day baby. Like, this is awesome. This is why she was waiting. She wasn't. Spoiler alert.
I love that. I have a baby that I thought would not be a Mother's Day baby. And then he was a Mother's Day baby because of how long it took. So we're kind of twins.
That's so funny. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So, you know, you never know. But yeah, I had contractions all night, labored at home. I like had big plans. I had a doula, Brett Howard from Many Veils, amazing. Anyone in San Francisco, I highly recommend her. And so we had made all these plans, kind of like about a circuit that I was going to do through my house, you know, like the, you know, change of scenery, go outside on the porch, go into the bathroom, whatnot. And I was like stuck. I was holding on to my bedpost like it was the only thing keeping me alive. And I was having really, really bad back labor. And I had like through my entire pregnancy, I had loved being on my hands and knees. Like it felt so good for me. And so I thought I was going to labor like that. No, it felt so awful. and I was like vomiting and everything. I did use a TENS unit, which was amazing. That probably like kept me going more than anything. And I also, because I was new, we knew to birth, like we didn't really communicate with our doula very much, even though like we had her. So I kind of regret that. And I learned for my next birth, like to be much more communicative, or like make my husband be more communicative about what was going on. And we headed into the hospital at 7 a.m. and they checked me in triage. I was 3 centimeters and my water broke like as they were checking me, like all over the floor. My sweet husband like whips a thing of paper towels out of the bag and starts cleaning it up. And the nurses are like, don't worry about it. But I went in being like, I want an epidural. And so I, you know, it moves fast once you come in saying that, right? I was like, I'm done with this. This really hurts. Not where I was expecting it to hurt. And like, get me the epidural. Let's go. So they got me into the room. Everyone was super upbeat. They like wrote on the board, like Mother's Day baby, like this is happening. And I got the epidural, but it didn't really cover all my pain. It was some relief, but it didn't, you know, I think maybe because of the back labor or whatnot, like it just, or maybe it was just kind of a not a great epidural. It wasn't full. And so I labored during that day. By 5:30, I was 6 centimeters. And that's when the midwives who I was working with went off duty. And that's when there was OBs overnight, which I didn't really realize. I kind of like assumed I'm with the midwives group. They're going to be around all the time. But because of staffing, they're not there the whole time. So
that's really
I also thought like I would know someone who was there, didn't really interact with anyone who I had like had. I tried to see the same provider the entire time and she just wasn't on shift. And the OBs came that first night when they're like at 7 o'clock when it was the overnight shift. That was kind of like the first time where I was like, okay, or maybe the second time after the Sunnyside Up comment, where I was like, okay, like this is not what I expected. And so they came to talk to me and they were like, okay, you're like, haven't, you know, it's been a while. Your water's been broken for a while. We're going to put the endouterine monitor in for you so we can kind of monitor your contractions. And it showed that they were pretty consistent, but not productive. I'm putting that in quotations.
And for women of strength that are listening, can you tell us a little bit about what that, it's an intrauterine pressure catheter, an IUPC.
I totally had no idea what it was, but it goes into the baby's head.
There's two different ones. Oh. So an IUPC, okay. What you're talking about, the inner pressure and uterine catheter, kind of looks like a balloon and it goes next to baby and it is measuring babies. It is measuring your contraction strength. So that the external monitor that they put on your belly that monitors contractions really only picks up that like something is changing with your uterus. So when you see it on the monitor going up and down, it's not actually measuring anything other than like, oh, your uterus is doing something. So they have no idea like how strong is your contraction. So when they put in the IUPC, that one is, it just kind of lays next to their head and it is measuring the actual pressure of your contractions. And so then they can get a better picture of like if you're dosed on Pitocin, like are we at a right dose? So they can, I've seen them be really beneficial in almost saving someone from a C-section because then they actually have like a tool to better understand somebody's labor. But yeah, the one that goes on their head is a fetal monitor. So sometimes people have both, but you could definitely have an IUPC without the electrode on baby too. So
I think mine was definitely an IUPC. So thank you for clarifying. Yeah. So that, and then they could tell that it like wasn't really working. And so that was when they put me on Pitocin. And then it was kind of like, you know, into the night, into the dark. My doula had me in like Queen's pose to try to get the baby to drop because like my station was super high. She was just high the entire time. And it was because she was OP. She just wasn't like dropping into my pelvis the way that, you know, she was supposed to. And the bright spot of my labor that I always think back to is that we did like a little poetry circle. I love poetry. And so like my mom and my husband and my doula and I were all reading stories about like bringing children into the world. And I'm blanking on the poet, but there's one about the umbrella. I don't know if you've ever heard it, where it's a woman writing about like her childhood and remembering how, you know, it felt like her mom never let it rain on her because she was always holding the umbrella. I don't know. It's just like, feel like really cool. Like
those things make me like sob. My husband and I have a poem about like parenting that I got for our anniversary a couple years ago hanging in our bedroom. And I can't even like look at it without like just, oh, wow. That's so beautiful.
And like, I needed that because it was going on, you know, who knows how many hours. And I just like needed that little moment of the emotion of the fact that I'm going to meet my baby, even if this is not going the way I thought it was going to go. Yeah. And then, you know, 10 p.m., they checked me again. I was still at 6 centimeters. I had not progressed at all. And there was actually like a little, it's a teaching hospital, which I love in theory, but for me, it was hard to have the experience of there was a resident OB who checked me and said I had progressed, but the head OB disagreed. And so they had a disagreement about what my dilation was. And it was the kind of thing where it mattered whether they were going to let me keep going. If I had progressed, they were going to give me like 4 more hours. And if I hadn't progressed, then it was going to be like C-section time.
Totally.
And so consistency to have them disagreeing.
And who's checking you too matters, right? Because like, at least then you have one person that's like, oh, well, this is different than the last time I checked you. But with a student and then another OB, like that's so tough.
Yeah. And like, I appreciate the resident was the one who was like, she progressed, like, let's keep going. And so I did get that grace period. But for me, like emotionally, it was kind of hard to be like the whiplash of it. And yeah, I never progressed further. And so, you know, from 10 p.m. to 7 a.m., I was just laboring in pain, not great epidural. And finally, they came in to have the conversation. And they're like, this is, at this point, it's not a choice. Like, it's been this long. It wasn't an emergency either. It was just like a rest of descent. Like, this isn't happening. It was really hard to you know, have that conversation, but I was like so ready to meet my baby that I was like, okay, let's do it. And it was great. My doula was like, we're gonna ask for 5 minutes. Like you do have to do this. It's not necessarily a choice, but like you also can have 5 minutes to process and then go because it's not an emergency. So that was really great to just like take a second and be like, okay, this is how it's happening. And they wheeled me back. I do think the coolest part was those ridiculous things they like the cushion they put you on that blows up and it's like being on a little cloud. I loved that part of it. But they were checking my pain coverage with a little spiked wheel and I could feel it. And I told them that. And so they were like, okay, well, we can't operate on you if you feel anything. So like, we're going to have to put you under general anesthesia. And my husband wasn't there yet because they were still prepping him. And so I kind of staved off the conversation until he came in and then we were able to be like, are there any other options? And they're like, I guess we could do a spinal. But the thing is that it was at shift change. So once that decision was made, all the people who had just like introduced themselves and were getting ready for the operation were like, bye, we're clocking out. Like you get your spinal and then there's going to be a new team. So a whole new wave of people to meet. And I was just kind of like, you know, in a blur.
Well, how amazing for you. Like, bravo to your advocacy skills in that moment to say, like, can we wait? Can we, like, what are our options? Because, gosh, how frustrating that, like, we're just going to jump to general anesthesia.
It does seem crazy that
like,
they said
that's worst case scenario. You know? I know. Like, how?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and then I just think the pain coverage was not great for me. And in the end, I definitely felt, you know I've been reading, like, the New York Times podcast that came out and all this stuff about women feeling stuff in their C-sections. And I, you know, I wasn't in excruciating agony, but I definitely, I felt more than I think you're supposed to in the end. And, you know, there's like that, I think back to it and there's that incredible moment of meeting her. And I have like this, such a clear vision of them lifting her over the curtain and just feeling like this instant love and like absolute, like, incredulous at how amazing this was that this person just came out of my body. Like that was unbelievable. And then, you know, the hour after stitching you up and you're like, oh wait, I thought that moment was going to keep going, but like, actually I'm, you know, have a couple other things to do over here.
Yeah. What did that look like for you once? So she comes out and were they able to get you skin to skin? Was your doula able to be in the OR with you? No. Okay.
Doula was not able to be in the OR. My daughter, she was not in distress, but she was covered in meconium. So when they took her out, they were like, we gotta make sure this baby's okay. And so my husband went with her, which is completely what I would want him to do. And she was smiling up at them. They said, so sunny side up, like, hello, ready to come out. And she was also huge. She was 9 pounds, 6 ounces. So that was also part of why, you know, the positioning wasn't right or whatever. so my husband went with her, and then I felt really alone. And I think that was, you know, when I was prepping my next birth and knowing that a C-section was a possibility, I was like hyper-focused on the idea that like I didn't want to feel alone like that. Because you can do anything if you're holding someone's hand that you love, but like when you're hearing the baby cry from like the other side of the room and you're just like, ugh, okay. So that I definitely came out of it and was like, okay, I didn't know about family-centered gentle cesareans, no idea about any of that because I didn't do any research. And so it was just kind of like along for the ride of what their normal policies were. Yeah. And so like after, you know, it took me a while to process the experience. I think recovery was not terrible. I definitely like pushed it too far too fast. I was really excited to carry her in a baby carrier. So I did that probably earlier than I should have and like irritated my scar. But I think like emotionally, it definitely took a while. It helped so much to talk to other people who had had a similar experience. It helped to listen to birth stories of other people talking about kind of their feelings of, I felt like I've always been kind of a, you know, like perfectionist, like want to get an A on the test kind of person. And I didn't realize like how much of that I had internalized about birth. Which is so messed up, but like that's 100% where my head was at. And I felt like I had failed. And it took me a really long time and like a lot of therapy and a lot of talking to people to help myself get out of that mindset. And I listened to birth stories on the feedback link. Yay. I listened to a lot of things on the birth hour. It was so great too. And I also was like, I can't, if I want to have another baby, I can't just listen to birth stories of what I want to happen. Like I got to listen to them all. So I listened to a ton more variety. I really liked a lot of CVAC stories, like stories where, you know, people are processing it and finding the beauty and whatever the outcome was. Because I was like, I'm not going to set myself up like this again to feel like I failed at something that is not something you can fail at. Your baby, you know? And I wanted
it's hard because like the stamp and the label of like failure 100%. To descend or failure to progress like that so deeply ingrains like what we feel about ourselves, right? And I think the language and how we speak about birth in all aspects, like right, so many people hate the word toe-lac.
Oh my god, and don't get me like
but it's so true. It's all of those like things and small nuances that are like this language and how we speak and how we label things. I feel the same way about my miscarriage being labeled as a spontaneous abortion. You know, like all of those things are really tough for ourselves as we like look back at our medical notes. And so, gosh, like that is such a thing to process for sure.
Looking back at medical notes too is such a experience. Like I remember when I realized that I could go in and read everything and then I was obsessed and you're like Googling all the acronyms and trying to figure out like what this meant and then discovering things that you had no idea about. It's just it's cool that we have access to them.
It is. My favorite, I'm missing a fallopian tube from an ectopic pregnancy. And my C-section note says both fallopian tubes visualized and are normal. And I'm like, really? Did it grow back? Like where is it? Where did it come from? That's so
funny.
Like I know it was like a copy paste like note that they probably only edit if something was weird, but I'm like, it's funny that no one noticed that.
Oh my god, that really does not, it's not inspiring. Oh my gosh, yeah, but anyway, like this is just why I love, you know, podcasts like this. I think it's so great, and I think, you know, I might not have known that like I could go for a VBAC and known about the statistics and stuff, but I felt a lot more empowered knowing that there's a lot of people who had gone for it and it worked out. So I knew I wanted to try, but I wanted to try with a mindset that also was accepting of any outcome. So I did some like preparation before I got pregnant or maybe right after I got pregnant. I read Birthing After Cesarean by Hazel Keitel, which I'm sure you get recommended on here all the time, but it's so good. Like truly so good.
Amazing. She's amazing. Like, and she's been on the podcast twice. If you've never listened. Actually. Yeah, there's been two. She was on once for that book. And then she wrote a newer book for providers specifically.
Oh, that's awesome.
So she's amazing. Her stuff is wonderful.
So great. Well, and I just love from the title. It's not VBAC. It's not how to do one specific thing. It's here's how you might feel after you're like going into your next birth after you've had a C-section. And here are some things that maybe can make you feel better about whatever happens. And like that is the way I wanted to approach it. So I really appreciated it. Like guiding my goals to not have it be solely focused on the outcome, but like empowered in the process, active in labor, supported by your providers really helped me. And I feel like a lot of, I don't know, I don't want to generalize, but what the media that I was consuming that was being fed to me by my algorithm about VBACs was like, it felt a lot of like people being super dead set on it needing to happen. And I was just worried that my mental health would, if I like ended up with a repeat seat, that I would feel again like I failed because all these other people tried for a VBAC and maybe they advocated more than I did or whatever.
Yeah.
And I just didn't want to be that's so, like that.
That's profound, truly. I think that Paige and I say this a lot, Paige's perspective as a CBAC mom, you know, yeah. Like a VBAC doesn't heal what already happened. And we have mm-hmm. to be able to like to process and to do the therapy like you did and to
yeah.
and to do that work and then to make peace with whatever outcome is ideal before you head into your next birth experience, because we can do all the things in the world and there is a massive level of unpredictability and things that we can't control in yeah. birth, and no one is superior for achieving a BBAC nor less than for having a yeah. CBAC.
See, and then it's the word like achieving. It gets me, you know, successful VBAC. I just feel like, oh, it's like all set up for me to feel like if I don't do it, then I haven't achieved it.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's so fair. I appreciate the check. No, like, it's good. It's good for us.
Of course, because you feel like it's the best thing ever. And it is healing on some level. Or at least for me, it felt healing. But I also hope that if it had gone differently, I also would have felt it was different because I knew more and I was able to advocate for myself more. And like, that's so powerful to feel like you were seen.
Yeah. And to have the control back in your hands, right? Like, that's so protective. For trauma, it'll have aired by the time your episode comes out. We had a birth trauma therapist, Ashley Ward.
Oh,
she's
cool.
A friend of mine, and I'm obsessed with her. And she talks a lot in her work about how there's a difference between experiencing something traumatic and walking away traumatized. And often we can experience something traumatic, but if we were supported and we had autonomy in our decision-making and all of those things, that is what is protective of trauma.
Wow.
So even though if you experience something that is really hard, it doesn't inherently mean that you'll walk away traumatized. And I think it's why doulas matter so much. It's why having a supportive team matters so much, because those are the things that are the building blocks around this traumatic walking away feeling traumatized moment, you know?
She sounds very wise.
Love her. Her episode's airing. Oh, crap. I can't remember. But it's Hi, Women of Strength. This is Lily. I wanted to personally chat about Needed's prenatal collagen. It was something I genuinely used during my VBAC pregnancy, and it became a non-negotiable part of my routine. What stood out immediately was how clean and simple it is. You're getting pure, hydrolyzed bovine collagen, nothing else. No fillers, no weird tastes, no chalky texture. It has neutral flavor that mixes perfectly into food or drinks, which honestly matters so much when you're pregnant. Collagen is especially important during pregnancy and postpartum because our body's natural collagen production actually starts to slow in our early 20s, and it's further impacted by stress, sun exposure, and just the overall demands of life. During pregnancy, birth, and recovery, your body is doing so much rebuilding. Collagen is rich in unique amino acids like glycine and proline, which are key building blocks that help support collagen production in the body and overall tissue support. For me, it felt like such a simple, intentional way to support my body through pregnancy, birth, and recovery. Needed continues to be a brand that I trust because they make supplements that truly support women through real life and real stages, and this was a big part of my journey. Get 20% off with code TVL. You can find the prenatal collagen and more at thisisneeded.com and type in code TVL at checkout for 20% off.
Happening soon.
Well, and actually, this totally leads into where I wanted to go next, which is that I thought a lot more strategically this time about building my team. I was like, this is my team in the room. And it was actually the same people, which is funny. So it was like my same doula. I really loved Brett and I wanted her to come again. And my mom, who is unbelievably supportive and incredible, and my husband. And this time I thought about like, what are each of their roles that like, that I need, what do I need from them like my husband is the rock, you know what I mean? Like he was the person who was going to be there, and his number one priority was like me as a person, you know what I mean? And then my mom, I asked her to be kind of the recorder because I found it helpful to go over the notes that people had taken and the texts from my first birth. Like it was for, I'm just like a, that kind of information processor. So it was helpful to like read it all. And so I wanted this time, I was like, can you just really be the record keeper of what's happening? And then also kind of taking notes with talking to doctors and things. And then Brett, my doula, she was my champion for having a VBAC because I think I was giving myself so much grace about it not mattering what happened that I couldn't necessarily be in the mindset of this will happen. Like I had a hard time getting there. I needed to like give myself the leeway. And so, but I was like, I need someone to like believe that this can happen truly. And so she was that for me. And it was really, really great to have someone who's like, you're going to have a VBAC. Like this is going to happen. Like I needed like somebody to have that vision. So she had that vision for me. And I also was much more thoughtful about my birth plan. I know you can't have a plan, but like my document that I was handing to the providers, I like wrote down goals like to feel informed, respected, and control, to remain active, and to have a VBAC if conditions are favorable. And then if, you know, a cesarean is best, then like, you know, gentle, family-centered with effective pain control. And, you know, I like explicitly asked that any nurses and providers like be supportive and encouraging of my plan. And I kind of skipped over getting pregnant, but we just, it took a long time last time. This time was the first time. So it was happening maybe even like earlier than I mentally was ready for it. But I was like, okay, like, let's go. And I had another uncomplicated pregnancy, but I did end up switching providers. Not necessarily because I think that the UCSF midwives team wasn't supportive of a VBAC, but I think mainly just because I needed something different. Like, I'm not sure it was logical. I think it was 100% like emotional. Like, I just needed it to be different this time. And I found a great, another midwife group in San Francisco, the Mission Bernal Women's Clinic, which is actually super close to where I live, which was great. But they deliver at a different hospital. They deliver at a CPMC hospital. And I had heard things about them having a higher C-section rate. So I had to do some digging on numbers and realized that actually the statistics for the hospital were different than the statistics for the specific provider. So that was like interesting for me to learn about. And like the provider was super supportive and had like great, amazing VBAC rates. And I was like, okay, I feel good about this. And I'm glad I looked into it. Because otherwise I would have thought, oh, why am I giving birth at CPMC if like all their numbers are worse?
Totally. And I think that matters too, because there's so many, it sounds like you are similar to our area where hospital and potentially there are some providers that like work for that hospital, but there's other providers that have independent practices that also deliver there. Yeah. And so then you get kind of looped into the statistics overall, arcingly, on multiple practices. And so that's amazing that you found like, what is your specific provider's rates and support and their like their group that they practice with, not just the hospital itself. So bravo.
I actually think I had to ask them. I couldn't find it. I also had a terrible time. I'm surprised. In San Francisco, you can't find like a blog post being like, here are the most VBAC supportive providers. Like I couldn't find any information. I didn't know about your spreadsheet.
It may not have existed at the time. It used to be this like really janky PDF that lived on our Facebook group that never got updated. And I like begged Megan a couple years. I was like, can I make it a spreadsheet that like lives? And so Women of Strength, if you're listening, we have a spreadsheet of VBAC supportive providers. You can find it on our website and it is a living document. So it gets updated. I update it myself biweekly. I'm putting air quotes around that. I do my best. But we updated it. So yeah, hopefully it's a resource now. But yeah, I feel you on it. Just things like that don't always exist.
Yelp reviews. I was like, what am I doing? I'm like, I haven't looked at Yelp for years. And here I am like trying to find out information about like VBACs.
Totally. And it's so hard. And there's some practices that are more open to like a consult appointment to ask those questions than others, right? Like that's the ideal is that you have a consult. But some practices are like, well, no, we won't talk to you unless you're establish
our patient. Yeah. I just like crossed my fingers and made the leap, and it turned out well for me. Yeah. And I mean, they were very supportive the whole time, even though they knew like my last baby was really big. They didn't push for like growth scans or didn't do any of that like scary language around big babies, which was helpful. There were a couple restrictions. The restrictions were that I couldn't go past 41 weeks and that I found out later, I was like very on the train of wanting, if I had to get induced, to get a fully placed and then to go home like outpatient style. I don't know why. I was just like very focused on that because I really wanted to labor at home. And they, in the end, would not allow me to do that. I think it was because of the hospital's policy. They, if you got any like induction method, you had to stay in the hospital if you were VBAC. So those were the things that I ran into. And the only thing that really came up during pregnancy is that, you know, from the first time that they could check his position, he was also OP, also sunny side up. So for like the last third of my pregnancy, like I was asking them every time, I was like, get out your little ultrasound machine and just like see where he's at. I like was living in the spinning babies. I think I just was hyper focusing on that as like, for some reason, what I felt like was the reason it had happened last time. I don't think that's necessarily true, but that's where I was at. And so I was just like obsessed. And I don't know, maybe there just might be something about my pelvis that's like how my babies want to be. They like feel really cozy like that. But he was just like, that's where he was. He did not move. So it made me feel pretty pessimistic. I just felt like everything was going to happen the same way. And, you know, 40 weeks came along. I had them do a cervical check. I was like so very, very closed. They were like, wow, your pelvis is like incredibly posterior. And I was like, awesome. Love it. I also had like really, really painful cervical checks with this pregnancy. I don't remember it being as painful the first time. I don't know why. So that's just, I think I was going to talk about that a little more later, but so I was like, I was caught between like wanting to know the information as though it was going to help anything versus like not wanting to have that experience. But the midwife was great because she was like, okay, if by the time 41 weeks comes around, you are still so like your cervix is still, you know, unfavorable, we wouldn't be able to place a Foley. So let's talk about what an alternative plan is. And that's when she brought up dilapan rods, which I had never heard of. And it was really cool that she brought it up as an option because it's another way to do cervical ripening. And my understanding is that what they are is these little rods that they try to put as many as possible in. I think they just do it with a speculum. And they, correct me if this is not right, but they are like little sponges and they soak up all of the cervical juice. Yum. And get bigger and bigger and bigger, and therefore are like widening.
Yeah. Yes. Really, it's like it's a method of mechanical dilation. Yeah. So you're describing it really well. They're small rods. They can go in when you are minimally dilated. They are like little sponges, and they absorb. Yeah. And they're non-pharmaceutical. So it's not a prostaglandin. They're not contraindicated for VBAC. I will say, Women of Strength, I'm so excited that Willa's talking about these because we get questions about them often. We actually need to update some of our resources because they are minimally available in the United States. Mm. So definitely ask your provider about them. I've asked labor and delivery. They're just local to me. And they're like, that medication's not available here. I'm like, well, it's not a medication. So let's try to figure this out. So definitely, I think so cool that your provider had this option. I've heard about them being used primarily in Europe. But I'm stoked that they are being more widespread because I love that it's another option for women. Yeah. Because we see that all the time of like, I'm not dilated. So they're telling me I can't be induced, you know? So,
yeah.
Okay.
And like, going. I don't even know. I guess it would have just put me on Pitocin otherwise. But for me, it really worked out well. I heard is also that they're expensive. And so they don't like to, they're expensive. And I think they require like you to be in the room and be monitored. And so, you know, it's like not the first choice for a hospital necessarily, but thank goodness for my saintly provider midwife who was like, and I mean, we made the plan at 40 weeks, you know, I still was living in the land where I was not going to need to be induced at all, But she was like, no, and this is our plan. And like, I, looking back, so appreciate that. And I mean, on the subject of induction, like, I was definitely panicking about getting induced since I had heard that it lowers your chance of a successful VBAC. And I was feeling like, okay, if my baby's like in a hard position, and then we're also, you know, adding in this induction rather than spontaneous labor, then like last time, like, I'm, you know, what are the chances that this is going to work out for me? So I ended up getting a couple sessions of acupuncture. If anyone's done that when they're trying to induce labor and they put the little burning like cones on your pinkies. I don't know if it helped, but it was a very cool experience. And I listened to some great VBAC induction stories, which was great. And tried to focus on the fact that, you know, getting stuff earlier is getting it going earlier was a good idea. And then it was the day of. I was 41 weeks. It was supposed to be at 7 a.m. to go into the induction, but they pushed me back into the evening, which was actually lovely. And my like parents were up in the city already. So my husband was off work. We like went and had a fun day, went to the Japanese tea garden, had a nice final dinner. My husband and I like decided on our son's name on the way to the hospital. And my doula came to meet us at the hospital to be there like while we were being oriented to the plan, which is something that I probably wouldn't have asked last time. But I was like, can you like, I felt a lot more empowered to be like, hey, like, can you be here? Like, I know this time is going to be hard for me. Like, can you come for this? Like, I'd asked her to be there for early labor for me because I knew that was hard for me last time, which didn't end up, I mean, yeah. But she was there for the conversations, which was great. And yeah, so they, you know, cervix was still not dilated, so they used the DilaPen rods. They were able to put four of them in, which is great. That's almost the max, I think. And I used nitrous to get through the process of placement because it was also, I was just like, the whole area down there was not vibing with any of these operations. So, and then they offered me morphine for any pain and sleep, and I said yes. And it was great. Because then I like got sleep overnight and like had some uncomfortable contractions, but was able to kind of like rest. And I woke up in the morning and I was 4 centimeters dilated and more dilated than I was last time when I arrived at the hospital after that like sleepless night of back labor. So I was like, okay, like things are better already. And I think like my kind of view towards pain relief for this birth was that I wanted to hold off on the epidural because my goal was to stay active as long as I could, but I was really open to things that didn't mean I couldn't be active later. So like morphine meant that like once it wore off, I was able to be standing and moving again. Nitrous, same deal. So I was like, sure, like bring it on. So they took the rods out that morning. My midwife manually maneuvered my cervix to be less posterior, which is just as painful as it sounds. Yeah, it was not fun. And then they put me on low-dose Pitocin at that point too, and told me that they were going to come back and break my water like in an hour or two. My doula came back. She had gone home overnight and we talked about it. She was like, we can probably push that. You know, you don't have to have your water broke in an hour. Like you can wait. So we ended up waiting. If anyone out there is a survivor head, I was deep in Survivor Australia versus the World. So that was like a great distraction as my contractions were kicking up. Read some more poetry. They kept upping the Pitocin. And then around 2 o'clock, I was like, okay, you can go ahead and break my water. Because I was still at 4 centimeters. It was still, you know, OP. And that was like the only thing that was on my mind. Even though they kept saying, like, you know, babies move later, it'll be fine. But because my daughter had not moved, that's where I was at in my head. I was like, this is what it's going to be forever.
Yeah. And we hear that, right? You were like an avid birth podcast listener. And so I'm sure you've heard like, oh, OP, like yeah, that's it's like the worst.
Scary. Yeah. And because I had the experience of it being the worst, I was like, okay, yeah, it's all right. Yeah. And they had a hard time breaking my water. I think his head was like in the way, like the whole, like super far back. There was no big gush. It was like very anticlimactic. But then my son had like a big D cell right after and I had to get up on my hands and knees and they turned off like down the Pitocin. I think he just didn't like love the check and then the water breaking it. But then my contractions got real. Like 45 minutes later, like my mom's notes are like, Willa is despondent. The contractions were like piggybacking on top of each other. I was super in my head. I was having back labor again. And I was like, everything is going to happen the same. Like, I was tunnel vision. I could not get out of it. I was like in the shadow of my past birth, and that I like could not move forward. I had all these plans. I was like, don't let me get an epidural before I get in the shower. Like, I know that really helps me. Like, or not even don't let me, just like offer these things to me, you know, before, because I made this goal before I was in pain. They were like, Lily, like, do you want to get in the shower? And I was like, absolutely not. Like, get me the epidural immediately. Like, I am so done with this. I was very much in the like, it's hopeless anyway. I'm going to end up in a C-section. Why should I suffer? Like, I'm so over it. Yeah, so I did insist, and I ended up having like the fentanyl while I was waiting for my epidural. But honestly, I'm really glad I did, because I was able to come back into my body, because I was really not in my body at all. I was panicking. And so coming back into my body, resting, and then my doula came back, and she once I got my epidural, which was amazing this time, like incredible. So good. They got me into the queen's throne again, or sorry, throne pose, queen's pose again, sitting up. And I think that the hour that I sat like that, he dropped, and they checked me again. And let me get the number right, because it was like, I think this was the moment, the turning point of my whole birth, was that they checked me again, and I was at 8 centimeters. And I was like, oh my God, like, this is going to happen. It was unbelievable. Like, truly such a cool moment. And in talking to my doula, she was saying, like, you know, those really intense contractions, like the hormonal change of my water breaking and really kicking in, like, they turned off the Pitocin. I was at that point, like, the rest of my birth, I didn't even need it, because my body just was like, let's go. This is happening, which is so cool. Like, that's so cool. And also, just like, logistical hospital note, this is September, which is like, you know, prime time for births. And so I think staffing was really hard across all the hospitals. We heard like a couple hospitals were on divert, and like we had a whole nine yards. And so after all of my prep for like a midwives group that I knew, that I had a relationship with, like the lovely ladies, my baby ended up getting delivered by a traveling male OB who was incredible, like unbelievable doctor. And like, I couldn't have planned it. I had no control over it. He just like came in. They're like, and here's the OB on tonight. Midwives aren't here. Sorry. And he was just like, so, so calm, had such good energy, and was just like, let's do this. And yeah, so like, I was, you know, labored a little bit more, labored down a little bit more, and they checked me, and I was almost complete. I just had a cervical lip, and so they waited a little bit longer. I think like in the 2 minutes that my like nurse who was there with me and like really coaching me stepped out, and like the break nurse was there, and then my doula stepped out too, so like no one was in the room. And then all of a sudden I had like one more D-cell, and the break nurse was like, this is happening, like start pushing. And like my doula comes back, and she's like, what is happening? What, like, you're pushing right now? Like, who told you to do this? And I was like, I don't know. Who knows what's going on? Yeah, so I pushed for about an hour and 15. Totally not what I expected. I, like, did pushing prep with my pelvic floor PT. And I think I did not breathe my baby out. I went on stage. He was 10 pounds, 3 ounces. So I did not breathe him out. They were like, push like you're pooping. And I did it, and you know, got him out. So it was.
And sometimes not super that's what pleasant. That's what has to happen. Yeah. And then we see our pelvic floor PT later for recovery.
Oh yeah, I'm there. We're like this now. I just went like a couple days ago. It was great, but yeah. So, and they were definitely kind of all around. There was, you know, some concern about shoulder dystocia. So they had like the stools, and like all the nurses were prepped, but he came out okay, and I had a third degree tear. So it was not, there's no free lunch. My kind of reflection on the recoveries is that I, like, one big reason for me to try for a VBAC was the recovery, hoping it was going to be easier than my C-section. Like, I have a toddler, you know, whole nine yards. I wouldn't say that I was easier physically at all, just different. I think emotionally it was so much, so much easier. And hopefully that would have been true no matter what happened, because I had prepped. But I found that even though my body was rough in it, my mind was a lot clearer, and I was, you know, I didn't have as bad of the baby blues or anything. And we were in the NICU with my son, because he like came home, and then we had to go back because he had a bad jaundice. And it would be so hard to be in that situation, recovering from a C-section and like so like emotional. I have so much. I mean, we were only in the NICU for like 2 nights. You know, everything changes when you've like had the experience and seen what that's like. Like, I have so much respect for people who go through that experience for much longer often. Oh, I kind of like ran out with my notes here, but in thinking back on it, the things for me about this birth that are like the story that I kind of hang, that the narrative that I've like processed and how I'm hoping to carry it forward for myself is really about it being like the journey of my last birth, and then realizing that this was new and different, and that inflection point is kind of where it all changed for me. And so I think, who am I to give advice? But the advice I would give is to like truly believe that it will be different. You don't know how it's going to be different, but it's not going to be the same as your first birth. That's just not, even if every single thing leading up to it feels like it's going to be the same, which it did for me, it still was different. And the thing that's different can be you. You could be the thing that's different. Your mindset, the people around you. Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's so beautiful. And I think that's what so many women in our community need to hear, is like, different baby, different birth. And gosh, even if you had ended in a cesarean, it still would have been different. And I love that you just said that. Like, you were different. You had a different prep. You had a different mindset. And that is all you could hope for. So, wow.
It's true.
Beautiful. And congratulations. You're 6 months in and seeing your pelvic floor PT like a queen.
Yeah. The OB who came in to like check me in the hospital after was like, this is
that's not what you want to hear.
No, I was like, nah. she was very blunt, but I liked that about her. But I do it all again. Probably not actually, but I'm glad it happened.
Yeah. Has PT been helpful as far as like recovery, or do you have any pro third degree tear tips for the mamas out there?
It will get better. I definitely like a month and a half in was like, I can't believe I don't feel better. I'm still in so much pain. Like, is it ever going to change? And it did. Like, I feel, you know, so much better. PT, it's like so not what you want to do, you know, like you go and she's like, okay, like you really need to be stretching and like aggressively massaging this. And I was like, ow, I don't want to do that. But that's, you know, I think that massaging my C-section scar made a big difference too. So I think that's my takeaway, is like scar massage, sensitizing the area. You can't treat it like it's, you know, it's still part of you. You got to keep it moving. But I also love my pelvic floor PT. Shout out to Marcela Gonzalez at Sutter. Just, you know, kind of normalizing it and, you know, hearing about other people's recoveries and the importance of kind of like giving yourself that time, because it's so hard when you have a toddler and a newborn and like there's 1,000 other things I could be doing. But it's important for me and my body, and it's worth it. So.
Beautiful. Oh, well, Willa, thank you so much for your story, for your wisdom, for your reverent way that you prepared for your VBAC. It was a beautiful journey to get to hop on with you today.
Can I read you a poem at the end? The poem that I read during this birth. You can cut it.
Of course you can. No. Are you kidding me? Yes. Please read it.
Okay. So this poem is called Love After Love by Derek Walcott. The time will come when, with elation, you will greet yourself arriving at your own door, in your own mirror, and each will smile at the other's welcome and say, sit here, eat. You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine, give bread, give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who has loved you all your life, whom you ignored for another, who knows you by heart. Take down the love letters from the bookshelf, the photographs, the desperate notes. Peel your own image from the mirror. Sit. Feast on your life. And this one isn't about babies. Like my first birth, all the poems were about babies. But this one is about like yourself, you know? And I feel like for me, the second birth was about myself a little bit more. So.
Wow. Yeah. Such a beautiful way to end this episode. I love it.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbacklink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.
Hi all, Lily here. We've talked about how much we love Needed, but one product I really leaned on, especially through my VBAC pregnancy, was their prenatal collagen. I love how simple and clean it is. It's pure hydrolyzed bovine collagen, nothing extra, with a totally neutral flavor that mixes seamlessly into drinks or food. Collagen is especially important because our natural production starts slowing in our early 20s, and pregnancy, stress, and postpartum recovery only increase those needs. It's rich in amino acids like glycine and proline, which are key building blocks for collagen production in the body. It was such an easy, supportive addition for me during my pregnancy and recovery, and it's another reason why we trust Needed so much. You can get 20% off with code TVL at checkout. Head to thisisneeded.com today, and you can even stack it on top of their new subscription discount as well. So that's thisisneeded.com with code TVL for 20% off.